Support comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. This winter, Strategic Farm Marketing is holding risk management seminars near you. A complete list of meeting dates and locations can be found at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the February 8 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Jim McCormick of Allendale out of McHenry, Illinois, Brian Stark of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County, and Arlen Suterman of FC Stone out of Kansas City, Missouri, along with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting in Atchison, Kansas. On Thursday, the day we recorded this program, the United States Department of Agriculture, this would be the 8th day of February, updated its monthly world agricultural supply and demand estimates. They had some changes that were listed for this particular report. They lowered the corn ending stocks by 125 million bushels. That was done through a single number, an increase in the export markets of the same amount. Soybeans for ending stocks were increased by 60 million bushels, so they went from 470 million to 530 million. And on the world front, it's probably important to note that production out of South America was a wash, with 2 million metric tons being increased in Brazil and 2 million metric tons for soybeans as a decrease out of Argentina. Let's start with Arlen Suterman. I made note on your Twitter account that you, prior to the time that these numbers were released, were expecting that USDA could have a 535 million bushel carryout for the soybeans this marketing year. It ended up 530. How'd you get there? The same way that they did?
Well, looking for an expectation of lower export numbers, yes. And when we make our projections, we're looking for the end game where they could eventually be. And I've already adjusted that number higher, and unless we see a much smaller production number out of South America. And it's really based on the fact that we're running out of the end of our export season now for soybeans, and we're not picking up the pace, and we're going to have a deficit here.
Wait, so did you just tell me you adjusted it again after today, that looking forward you'll be higher than 535, or that you had already done it?
No, after today's reports and the export numbers that came out this morning, I went ahead and made additional adjustments, and I'm at 580 million bushels right now, which I believe we could easily hit if we don't see a significant reduction in South America that would send more export business our way.
Arlen Suterman, that is a big number. USDA is using an average cash price, I think, for this year at $9.30 still, which is the same as it was for last month. Do you see the price of soybeans, which is well above that at this point, having to tumble at some time in the very near future?
Not necessarily tumble. Now, my marketing year average price is just 8 cents lower at 922 because we have, the farmer has sold the majority of his soybeans, and that's based on his selling price. The other factor is we still have this money coming in here to give us a weather market. And so once the weather market's over, we could see the price down, but the farmer will have probably have sold much of their crop by that point. And so that's why I don't drop my marketing year average cash price much.
Jim McCormick from Allendale, you just heard Arlen tell us he's using a much bigger number even than USDA had today for ending stocks for soybeans. Where does Allendale stand today, and what do you think will happen in the future?
Well, Arlen came in about 5:30 for the report. Our official guess was 5:16, but I got 100% agree with Arlen. I think he's nailed it. The exports are coming in so far behind. If something drastic changes in the export picture, we're not anticipating. I think he's 580 to 600 million carryout. Unfortunately, it's going to be right in the ballpark. So we're pretty negative here at Allendale. We think in the long run, this market could fall out of bed 50 cents into the springtime, give us maybe a late spring summer rally. But we think we're, you know, without a major weather problem this year, we're going to see prices below 9 on the futures when it's all said and done, unfortunately.
I'd better seek out a dissenting vote if there is one. Maybe Mike Zuzulo has it.
I would say the only thing, I can't disagree, and I hate it when people say that when I say something. So I'm sorry, guys, that I said that. I am suspicious that we will climb to that level before the end of the marketing year, simply because of the meal stocks. And I think the meal, there's so much to unpack in this report, but to stay with your question, Todd, the meal turned the whole market around today. And I think it's because we only have about 16 days of supply of global meal stocks. And if the meal technicals go on higher and we can take out the 100-week moving average this week, which we're above right now. We haven't seen a weekly close above that since July of 2016. And if we can get above that and even go above 350, we're talking about a brand new fresh breakout. And I think it looks technically supportive to the bean market, to the point where I think you'll get more opportunities to hedge and hedge at better price levels before those kind of ending stocks numbers hit the market. And maybe those ending stocks numbers are going to be closer, in my opinion, to more like 515 to 525, because I do think demand will pick up in the export market, because I think we've already had enough weather market here at this stage to push China into buying more of our beans. And what I mean by that is I've been the most nervous of anybody, or out there as nervous as anybody, about China and U.S. trade relationships with North Korea. But as U.S. supplies stay high and global supplies go down, they have less of a biting hit to the market with trade issues. So I'll kind of leave it at that right now. I just think in the short term, if meal technicals provide support here in the short term, we can and should hedge higher prices.
How short is short term? Are we talking within the month?
Yes, within the month of February, because that would match up fundamentally as we'll either have a weather market on our hands or not, because February is the month that Center West Brazil gets their beans out and their second crop corn in. If we get a second wind to this weather market, I believe it'll be this month.
Meaning if they get enough rain and they delay their safrinha crop, or they simply, well, I don't think they couldn't dry out that fast, so it would have to be a delay in the safrinha crop. Okay, Brian Anderson, you've been listening, Brian Stark from the Andersons, you've been listening to this conversation. Where do you stand on soybean exports?
I can't differ much from what the other three gentlemen have already said. I think the carryout is at risk mostly to grow. I may be with Mike a little bit because of the meal strength, that guys will get a little bit more opportunity to sell this month. Our biggest thing is when you look out to November 18 beans, putting some sort of a minimum price strategy in place is important. Got to create a floor above $10. The producer seems to like $10 beans, and whether they're patient for a follow-through rally potentially this month, I think they do need to protect against potential bearishness down the road. And our guys have done a really good job of pricing their beans, their old beans, already. And I think that was alluded to earlier by having the ability to sell $10 here back in December. So I think that's the next stage of the game for the producer, is to find a way to create a $10 floor for his 18 beans.
Yeah, so do you have suggestions for how they're going to do that? Because if we look out and you think about a 530 or a 580 million bushel carryout, those are really big numbers, and it doesn't seem that a 10 handle should be in the offing, certainly by the time we get to fall. So how do you put your floor in?
I think you have to look at some sort of a put call strategy. I think that we call them min-max strategies. I think buying a put, selling an out-of-the-money call to help finance a transaction gives you some upside, but also creates a floor. And we may not be able to get a net $10 floor today with that type of a strategy, but I think if the market gives us an opportunity with another leg up, potentially based on strength in meal, then I think that's where you have to really execute at a high level.
Jim McCormick, you agree with this idea that you really have to think about what you're going to do about your 18 soybean crop and how to make sure you have a floor in place?
Yeah, what we were doing, what I was doing even before the report came out, I was buying actually the June short-dated $10 put, so on the June short-dated 1140 or 1040 call, essentially giving these guys either a $10 floor or a 1040 ceiling, because I believe, you know, like last year, once we get through this weather premium in South America, I think we could be breaking pretty hard, and that'll give them a $10 floor, which I think is very critical. I think economics are very tight from what talking to a lot of my banking customers, and I think that, you know, they feel much better when they find out customers have $10 beans floored in or, you know, 1040 ceiling. They seem pretty comfortable with that because they know they can make money at those levels. So those are what we're encouraging.
By the time we get to Monday, we'll be, what, not quite halfway through the month of February. Can we maintain Arlen Suderman, the prices that we have at the moment for soybeans during the crop insurance setting process?
That's the big question. I think we can, because of the dryness we're seeing in Argentina, that's keeping some interest among hedge fund managers we talked to in the soybean complex in the near term. That's kind of given us our weather story right now. When we talk about the meal tightness, I think it's important for farmers, and I totally agree with what's being said, but it's important for our listeners to understand that the job of the market when meal supplies is tight is simply to rally the price so that it gives a crush margin incentive to crush more soybeans, and we've got plenty of soybeans to crush. So that's why they shouldn't expect a sustained rally out of this. And I think that's consistent with what's being said here today. And I think our best hope right now is this Argentine weather situation. As you know, weather rallies last as long as the next forecast. And then once that threat is passed, once the market feels like the worst is behind us, at that point, then the focus comes to the U.S. growing season. And the U.S. growing season right now, we're looking for higher acreage. And most of the forecasters, while there are some arguments there, most forecasters right now, I think, would argue for a normal growing season. And that means adding to these supplies.
Hey, Mike, why is it that meal supplies are so tight?
I think part of it goes back to just a sheer lack of demand or lack of supply from our biggest competitor, and that's Argentina. I mean, about 60 days ago or 45 days ago, one of the colleagues and contacts I have down in South America and Argentina specifically was reporting that they were having difficulty in Rotterdam sourcing meal for Argentine's origin. And I think that while that's been alleviated a little bit, it's a short-term feature. I think the biggest thing that coming out of today's report, other than the meal technicals, is the fact that right after the USDA gave us the 54 million metric ton production number for Argentine soybeans, the Buenos Aires Grains Exchange came in and just walloped it down to 50. And if that number's right, I think that does a lot in terms of helping the global price of meal. And Arlen, I'm glad he made that point about the meal and the market goes after what it needs. And fortunately right now, March meal crush margins are almost $1.20 a bushel. So, I mean, the profit is there. I think for me and what I'm talking to clients about after today's report is watch your cash basis in the beans. It's probably going to get worse if you're not near a processor. Your corn, probably the exact opposite. It seems like to me that this report was really set up for the cash market and the basis market because of the 125 increase in corn demand and the 60 million bushel decrease in bean demand. And your stocks to use now are getting very nice in terms of price supportive for the corn and really ugly in the soybeans.
Okay, somebody's going to have to help guide me through part of this meal conversation. So this is a global meal conversation, short supplied, looking to Argentina. So it's really the futures that we're talking about, because that wouldn't be coming on the market, not yet, because they don't have a harvest there.
Argentina has plenty of supplies of soybeans left over from last year. They've got a larger supply available. Somebody correct me if you have information otherwise, but they've got the supply there, but with the problems they have with the export tax, et cetera, there's been a disincentive for being able to put it out. Now, of course, they have a labor shortage strike going on now. But it's not that they don't have the soybeans to crush.
To answer a question, you know, our project before today, we had about 12.8 million metric tons of beans at the ending stocks. Argentina was at about 36, to put it in perspective. I mean, like I said, they have plenty of beans, an excess supply. And part of the farm, like I said, the farmers don't want to get rid of it. Inflation's running at 20%. So they like to view the farmers are keeping a hold of these beans. I believe it's just as a way of, maintaining ownership. They don't want to own pesos. They want to own a physical commodity because of the inflationary fears.
And I'm with you on that, but I was struck by the fact that we saw USDA cut the crush domestically in Argentina today again. And I think that's really puzzling because they do have those kind of stocks. And I'm sure it is probably mostly political and the inflation issues. It's just getting it out of the hands of the farmers at this stage. And if the weather stays inclement and we continue to, think that we're going to lose production, it's just going to get harder and harder. So I think we're all in agreement, but it's just a semantics issue of the timing aspect of it.
Well, yeah, let me check. Is everybody in agreement that meal that the meal number from USDA was the driving force behind the initial 10-cent rally after the after those numbers were released.
I think that in the whisper number, I think in the trade was higher on soybean stocks than what was published. So I think it's a combination of those factors. And I think when we come to the soybeans in Argentina, if we were to see some clarification on the weather in Argentina combined with a bottoming action in their currency, we could see a flood of soybeans hit the market and a flood of meal start to hit the market at that time.
Well, yeah, that was my next question, because if it's really meal and they don't actually have a meal shortage, we don't really have a meal shortage problem. We have a meal distribution problem, but that those can be fixed pretty quickly. That sounds like a dangerous situation. Maybe Brian Stark, you've got some thoughts here, too.
I can't disagree with what anybody else has said on the meal side of things. I think it is political, and I think that's the problem, the fact that we're not getting enough beans to the marketplace where the supply currently is versus where things are a little tighter. So from my perspective, I agree with what the other three gentlemen have said.
Okay, I can't believe we're, 16, nearly 17 minutes into the program, and I have not turned you yet to the 125 million bushel change that USDA put into the corn market. How surprising was that for you, Brian Stark?
It was a big surprise. I'll just give you some statistics I took a look at after the number came out. Now, granted, I'm thoroughly encouraged by the increased expectation of export demand, but the recent sales we've seen released have been helpful. But that just gets us close to where we should be with the older estimate. So weekly shipments need to average now 50.6 million versus the old estimate of 46 million weekly. Hard to see that happening when we haven't hit that average shipment pace needed yet with the old number. So call me a little skeptical on the increase. It was definitely a surprise, a welcome surprise, but it remains to be seen, I guess, if we can execute at a higher level than what we've done year to date so far.
Mike Suzzle, your thought?
I think one thing that has been apparent in this market from my vantage point is we have beat the horse to death of the big U.S. carryover, but we really haven't discussed the world-ending stocks or the world stocks-to-use ratios in corn, mainly because the wheat has been so burdensome. And if you look at the major players out there in the corn, and again, like someone else said, correct me if I'm wrong, but if you look at the major players in the corn, we're the only ones that are going to build stocks this year versus the past marketing year if these new Argentine numbers are correct. And so we are the only game in town at this stage of the game when it comes to supplies for to feed the world marketplace. And I think if you throw that in the feed and residual number, I think still a little bit too low personally, being only up 1.5% versus last year. And yet we're going to butcher, 55 billion pounds of pork and beef and hit new records this calendar year.
So how is it that we are continuing to manage this process of exporting so many bushels, Arlen?
On the corn side?
Yes.
Well, as we look at the corn, we are the cheapest corn in the world right now from the major suppliers. And to go along with what's being said, if our surveys are right, and this could change now with some of the price structure changes we see, we've been looking for a little bit of reduction in acreage this year. So we could see the four major players of China, United States, Argentina, and Brazil all see reduced corn production this year, even as demand ratchets up, and demand in China is really ratcheting up. Because Argentina would have cheaper corn supplies if they weren't so worried about the current crop that's in the ground. And that's keeping their prices elevated, their basis higher. And I think we're going to continue to have the world market until Argentina has a comfort level with the size of their crop. That's really helping with export sales. Export sales match the seasonal pace now to hit USDA's new target. But as was said, shipments do not. We have some catching up to do on shipments, and that leaves me nervous. I'm not as high as what USDA is. I do think that our ethanol number should go higher. I am higher with my feed usage number as well as what's been said. We are not running out of corn. But let's keep in mind where we're at now versus really, I think the market starts to get nervous when we drop stocks below 1.5 billion. So that brings our stocks use ratio down. We're not that far away from that. It wouldn't take that much of a change in the dynamics. There's nothing threatening that we're going to do that imminently. But the market's getting comfortable just-in-time supplies as long as there's no threat to that. And I do agree that the corn balance sheet is looking much more favorable now globally than what it was, and certainly better than soybeans.
Oh, I don't know, Arlen. 2.352 billion sounds like a long ways from 1.5 billion to me.
Well, I hear what you're saying, but when you start looking at the 2018 crop and how many bushels would we have to drop yield to lose 800 million bushels, it's not much.
What do we have? And I know you've got this figure, or I'm going to guess you do. If we have 90 million or whatever you've got in your acreage and normal yield, where do we stand for 18-19 carryout?
Our latest client survey showed 88.8 million, and we're surveying again right now. And with a change in dynamics, I wouldn't be surprised if that comes up. If I use a trend yield of 172.5, that gives me ending stocks of 1.8. That's just 300 million above that to 1.5. So that's not much. And of course, my old crop stocks, because I have higher feed usage and higher ethanol usage, my incoming beginning stocks number is a little bit lower too. I'm at 2.28 for beginning stocks for 18-19. So that's not much of a margin. We just have to drop a few bushels and suddenly we're at 1.5.
Jim, what's Allendale using for the 18-19?
Our 18-19 carryout right now, we're using about a 2-3 carryout at this point in time. So I think, when we're working with a trend yield about a 173.7, and like Ronald said, if you lose just a few bushels, it could change the balance sheet dramatically. We're a little bit friendly at Allendale right now. We think the prices are going to work higher in the springtime. If you look at where the stocks use today, if you look at the 15.9% stocks to use, this is where we were back in the fall when, December corn was trading at 404 last time the government printed this kind of number. So we think we've got some strength to go. And I'm a little bit – I think the corn numbers could shift a little bit harder. I think you've got some guys in the far delta. They're looking at planting cotton instead of corn. I think guys in the far northern spring wheat area are looking at maybe planting wheat instead of corn. A couple of my customers are doing that. And in the Midwest, I have several customers. Their banks are pretty much putting pressure on them to plant beans. So I think these corn acres, that may be the surprise to people, is we may lose a little bit more than people are thinking in the big picture.
So that corn acreage number is due out, actually, the prospective plantings report on the 29th day of March. That's our really next big report. We'll have a WASD before that, of course. Arlen tells us 88 was the last survey they had from F.C. Stone. Where does Allendale put the number at for corn acreage?
Right now we're about 89. So we're about a million higher than he's added 89. Now, like I said, that's our official estimate, but I lean to think it could be a little bit closer to 88 if the prices don't change much. If we can get corn back up toward a 4-420, I think you'll switch it around. We'll get some more corn acres. But if it stays here, I think the push is going to go into beans near term, especially if the guys are right. They were talking about meal pulling us up. If you can get the beans, let's say, rallying at 30, 40 cents, I think it just makes it that much more attractive to go ahead and plant the beans and lock in the profits.
Where do you put the bean acres?
Right now, our working number in the bean acres is a little about 90.2 million acres is what was our working number at this point in time. But that's our official company recommendation. I personally think it can get closer to 91, maybe as high as 92 if the prices rise enough.
And are you on line with USDA for their wheat acreage? And you're saying cotton acreage, so are you just losing acres this year in general in the United States?
I think some money's acres are going to come out, and I do think we'll lose wheat acres is probably going to get the short end of the stick. I think guys in, I have customers in Kansas that are talking about ripping up wheat, and they're going to plant cotton in under pivots this spring already. So I think the wheat is a short stick this year.
Mike Zuzulo, what kind of numbers have you been working with?
Well, I'm a little bit below 2 billion for 18-19 corn. The number that came out today was matched up with my estimates. I don't publish them anymore because the algorithmic traders, but I was at a 2.316, and so did well on the corn. I got absolutely slaughtered, though, on the soybeans. I was down around a 460 carryover in 17-18 beans. So if I push that up closer to 500 by the end of the marketing year, then I'm probably looking at 525 for an 18-19 bean carryover. And for 18-19 wheat, again, getting closer to the USDA slowly, I feel like it's going to be hard to get over 850 on a carryover in wheat because of what Jim was just talking about. There's going to be something that's going to have to be done in the hard red wheat belt unless this GFS model is correct, because it's bringing in a lot of rain in the next 10 days. And Europeans got some rain, but very, very little compared to the GFS. And we're kind of under crunch time when we come to March.
Brian, does the Andersons have a set of numbers that they published for acreage?
We haven't put out anything here recently, Todd, but I think I wouldn't disagree with what everybody else has been saying. I think the total acreage pie between corn and beans is probably some combination of 180 million. You could argue 90 of each. You could argue 89 corn, 91 beans. But I think that mix is probably what we're going to see come March 30 or March 29th this year.
The other item we have not taken up, and now we're a long ways into our program, but there were other things that may have happened in the market a bit earlier in the week that were pretty interesting related to inflation. The Dow Jones Industrial Average had a couple really wild days, actually on Thursday, still moving around a whole lot. I'm wondering what you all think of that and whether there might be some inflationary tendencies in our economy and if that will bolster the price of corn, soybeans, wheats, regular commodities. Arlen, what do you think?
Well, this is something we've been watching for quite some time because the Fed has pumped so much monetary stimulus in the system, not just here in the United States, but globally. It gave us an abnormally low volatility in the market for quite some time. The stock market was able to rise. A lot of money went into it. And now that we have fiscal stimulus and a strong economy, we're having to normalize things once again. We have alternative investments. Treasuries yields are going up. Money coming out of the stocks into there. And so we're having to rebalance all these markets and where the money goes. I do think it does give an opportunity, and the hedge fund managers we talk to see some opportunities with the equities now having a period of volatility, some of that money chasing after some commodities that may look like they have a story. And so that may amplify some of those moves a little bit. There's a little bit more interest in some of those. Till now, the commodity story has been the energy commodities and some of the industrials. Now they're looking at some of the ags. So that could amplify some of those moves and give some selling opportunities.
Mike, you want to follow up?
Only to add to what Arlen talked about, that have a story classification. I love what he said there. And I think another big feature for me, Todd, is I'm pretty disappointed with China's pork imports. I don't think they met up with the 2017 expectations. Their prices are going down sharply. They're down about 20% in some large provinces. And I think that the consumer relationship with the livestock and meat market has to really be watched as we build these production numbers up in red meat. So I'm fearful that the energies and the industrials, we can also tack on the livestock if we don't have any more disease pressure or any more blizzards to finish out the winter here, because we are going to be second half of 2018 looks like a very large supply base that we're going to be working from.
Any topics that I didn't cover that maybe we should have? Jim McCormick, anything on your mind?
Well, the only thing I was going to say is I am a believer. I think inflation is coming in, personally. I think that's going to what's going to bottom this market. And heck, we might have bottomed it last year when you look at where the price of corn and beans are where we were last fall. Like Arlen said, the Fed's been trying to push inflation for the last 8 years. They haven't had much success with it. And now that they're backing away from it, you're almost, to me, I'm getting organic inflation where it's just kind of up. When you look at like what crude oil's done, lumber, cotton's gone through the roof, even though they doubled the stock. So I think this inflation's really kicking in. The government's done something very strange that we've never seen. I mean, we had unemployment running at 4% or low, pretty much levels, Todd, that historically, and if you want a job, you can get it. Then we put the tax cut on top of it, which is accelerating. And then yesterday, this budget, we threw another $500 billion into the market. Think about that. When Obama did the stimulus in the crisis of 08, 09, it was an $800 billion stimulus. We just are essentially going to pump another $500 billion on top of the tax cuts. That money's going to go somewhere. And right now, I think you're seeing some of it in some of these, like I said, the energies and some of the other markets. But that may be the thing that really rises the markets in the long run, because the way I look at inflation, it's, you know, once it starts, you got to be careful because it seems like it can roar out of control a lot quicker than people ever anticipate.
Well, let's wrap up now. We'll get a final word from each of you. I think we'll start with Brian Stark of the Andersons. Brian?
I think the farmer needs to continue to focus on taking advantage of the rally we've seen here recently in corn after being locked in such a tight range for the better part of the last 60 to 90 days. We've seen great activity of selling some cash grain, and I think they need to continue to take advantage of this on a scale-up basis.
Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting.
Todd, we're less than a half a month away from the Beef House meeting. I want the listeners to know I ordered the pens today, so I'm coming all day long. You've got some neat pens coming, so we hope we have a good turnout.
We'll be glad to have you there. By the way, if they want to buy their tickets, they can do that online. Brian Stark, I think, should be with us too. willag.org, willag.org, or during regular business hours, 800-898-1065. Arlen Suderman from FC Stone, your final thought for the day.
Yeah, one of the things we didn't talk about was the grain sorghum and the action that China's taken to stop those shipments, which could back up supplies back into our ethanol and offset a little bit of that corn demand. I still am friendly of corn long term. I think there's going to be some opportunities, but that's going to play in the acreage mix this spring, I think, in the plains, and certainly be a factor there. And China could end up doing something similar on soybeans. Once it's comfortable, there's enough soybeans in South America that it could get the supplies it needs from there.
And finally, Jim McCormick of Allendale.
I'm encouraging all producers out there, you know, look at your balance sheets if they're profitable. We're encouraging guys to sell the beans. We're very fearful this carryout's going to continue to grow in the United States. Argentina's crop shrinking, but Brazil's crop is expanding almost one for one. And we believe in the long run, these prices are going to look back 6 months from now and kick yourself if you do not lock in these higher prices.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. There you'll find the agenda for the All Day Ag Outlook. It is the 6th day of March. That's the first Tuesday of the month. The cost is just $30. Buy the tickets online, willag.org, 800-898-1065. We'll have more than a dozen analysts there. Eric Snodgrass should be on hand to take a look at the weather forecast. Aaron Hager from the University of Illinois weed scientist will be taking up dicamba in something we call Dicamba Unfiltered. You don't want to miss that one. And we will take up block trades from the CME group and variable rate storage for corn and soybeans. And if they haven't by then figured out what to do about Section 199A of the tax law and how it operates with cooperatives, we'll discuss that too. Be sure to visit with us. Thanks to our panelists again today. They have included Arlen Suderman of FC Stone out of Kansas City, Mike Zuzulo from Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting, Jim McCormick from Allendale, and Brian Stark of the Andersons. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.